Good morning, all, and welcome. I'm going to call to order the meeting of the Government Operations and Elections Committee for the morning of Wednesday, the 25th of April, 2018. Representative Nelson, have you had a chance to review the minutes from the April 12th meeting and be willing to move those this morning?
I'll move the approval of the minutes from April 12th.
Representative Nelson moves the approval of the minutes from April 12, 2018. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
I'm sorry, I can't hear you. What was that?
Aye.
Thank you. It's been a while since you've been in committee. I'll remind you that what we need to do procedurally here. Ladies and gentlemen, we have four bills ahead of us this morning. The first bill is House File 4256, and as Chair Erdahl is making his way to the testifying table, I will move House File 4256 before the committee for consideration to be re-referred to the Committee on Legacy. Chair Erdahl, welcome, sir. Is there any opening comments that you'd like to make before you start with your bill? That's your intro.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Good to be here today. When do you want the treats?
Now would be a good time for you to talk about those.
Due to a lot of fine work by my L.A., Jennifer, we have some treats for you because, you know, customary for freshmen to give their treats out, so here I am.
Are you suggesting that that rule did not apply when you were a freshman, so you're just trying to catch up here at all?
I guess it must be. What we have here, first of all, I have a delete all.
Yeah, what I'd like to do is there's an incorporation, so if you would like to do the incorporation of the DE1, then we'll take the DE1 and amend the bill to the
Let's do that.
Why don't you explain your incorporation, and I will move that.
I've got to get the right
on there too.
Members, you should have the DE1 amendment to House File 4256 as well as an A1, although it's going to be an incorporation. It's on an A1. Oh, very good. Well, there's going to be an incorporation on page 6, line 2, after the word age. Representative Erdahl would like to insert the word disability. After the word age, page 6, line 2, would like to insert the word disability. And I will go ahead and make that incorporation into the DE1 amendment. And with that, Representative Erdahl, did you want me to move the DE and get it in the form you like before you make your presentation?
I think that would be a good...
All right, Representative Erdahl, I will move the DE1 amendment with the incorporation, as we just talked about, to House File 4256 to get it in the shape that the author wishes. Any discussion? Seeing none and hearing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed, the motion prevails. Representative Erdahl, to your bill as amended.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. And years back, when we were trying to begin the restoration of the state capitol, we created a commission to oversee the restoration of the capitol. Essentially, that mission has been completed, but we still have the commission. And it seemed wise that we continue the commission with a slightly different role, and that is to deal with the preservation and maintenance of the state capitol. And so the changes reflected in the DE amendment are regarding changes to the commission so that they can continue into the future dealing with preservation and maintenance. Purpose in doing this is if we don't, we are just in the same situation that we have been in for the last 100 and so years, where the needed repairs of the Capitol are often just kind of put off and no official decision is made. Under this, there will be a report made through the Department of Administration to the Commission at least once a year, more if needed, about the needs of the Capitol. The second part of the bill deals with the artwork in the Capitol. We have, as you've noticed, created a lot more public spaces in the Capitol, and those public spaces in the future can include new art. And so with the idea of having new art in the Capitol, it seemed wise to create a subcommittee of the commission to deal with artwork. And that's what the second part of the bill deals with, the new art in the Capitol, and how it should be, how we should decide where it goes and what artists are involved. And that's pretty much it.
Thank you, sir. Any member questions at this time for Chair Erdahl? Representative Nelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Erdahl. Nice freshman treats.
You're welcome.
Anyway, question I have has had to do with the Art Advisory Board, or committee, I guess is what it's called. There's two pictures that were removed from the governor's office, and I understand they're supposed to be in permanent display. They're up in the third floor now of the Capitol. Does this overrule that, or this could, so they could be removed, or are they still going to be on permanent display?
I know there's
a controversy about those two pictures.
Well, they could make recommendations that it should be removed, but the recommendations then go to the full commission, who would have to ratify that. It's just like any other. We now have the Historical Society and the CAP Board, and they can move or remove paintings as well. And so I don't know exactly what the future of those two paintings is going to be. The plan right now is that they are staying on the third floor. But at some future date, as with what happened to them this time, another decision could be reached.
Representative Nelson, follow-up?
No, that's just want to know where we're sitting with it.
All right. Representative Freiberg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm just I'll hold off.
Okay.
I'm looking at the wrong version.
Seeing no other member questions right now, is there anyone from the public who would like to testify on the matter before the committee, House File 4256, as amended? Anyone wishing to testify on House File 4256 as amended? Seeing none and hearing none, Representative Freiberg?
I apologize. I was looking at the original bill, and I think my question's answered looking at the delete all amendment.
Just say it's a fine piece of legislation, let it go with that.
That's usually the kiss of death around here, as we all know. So, seeing no other member questions, Representative Erdahl will give you the final comment, sir.
It's a fine piece of legislation.
And how would you suggest that the committee vote on that fine piece
of
legislation?
I think they should vote in the affirmative.
All right. I will renew my motion that House File 4256, as amended, be referred to the Committee on Legacy. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, the motion prevails. Representative Erdahl, you are on your way, sir.
Thank you.
Representative Gunther, you are next, sir. I will move as Representative Gunther is coming forward. House File 4244, House File 4244, to be referred to the Committee on Jobs.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Members, this House File 4244 is a really no-brainer because in statute, the U.S. Rural Development and the U.S. Department of Agriculture can loan small cities and small towns and up to $450,000. In every other state in the nation, they can lend $750,000 for fire halls, for city halls, for town halls, for daycare centers, for fire trucks, fire equipment, a host of things. And in Section 465.73, in the statute, it says $450,000. So what we're simply doing is changing that $450,000 to $750,000 so those people can get enough to get a bigger loan or grant for these various things.
Thank you, Representative Gunther. We have 17 people signed up to testify on your bill, so we'll begin with them right now.
Sure, I wish I could.
Members, questions for the bill author? Seeing no questions, anyone from the public who'd like to testify on the matter before the committee? House File 4244. House File 4244 before the committee. Seeing none and hearing none, Representative Gunther, we'll give you the final word, sir.
I think this bill is being referred to jobs. Is that correct, ma'am?
It is to be referred to the Committee on Jobs. You are correct.
It's a good bill. Please vote green.
All right. With that, I renew my motion that House File 4244 be referred to the Committee on Jobs. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, the motion prevails. Representative Gunther, you are on your way, sir. Thanks, Chair Gunther. Representative Precia. As he is making his way to the testifying table, I will move House File 3445 before the committee. And good morning, Representative Kreisha.
Good morning, Mr.
I believe you also have a DE amendment to this as well. And if you'd like, I'll move the DE amendment to get the bill in the form that you would like.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
I move the DE-3 amendment to House File 3445 to get the bill in the shape and form that the author desires. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed, the motion prevails. Representative Kreisha, to your bill as amended, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, members. Like an old friend, I'm back. And we're talking about rulemaking again. I know, Representative Nelson, we've been working on this, you and I, in one way or shape or another, for probably at least the last 6 years that I know of. And I think the language is getting better. I think the conversations are helping. At the end of the day, what we're trying to accomplish with this bill is simply to bring transparency and legislative oversight to the rulemaking policy and the rulemaking promulgation. Because we all know, we all run into situations where agencies use the legislation that we provide them, and they provide the rules, which we ask them to do, and I'm asking another review of that before it actually goes out into public. So to help the agencies and to bring some transparency into what our process is, what the language in front of you does is when a rule goes out, if it has substantial regulatory impact, we should have another look at it, or we should have the ability to bring that into a committee of jurisdiction, as well as bringing transparency to all of the, as you'll see in the language, manuals and policies they put. And I think this is just good stewardship on our part as legislators. And so that's what we have in front of us, Mr. Chair and members.
Thank you, Representative Kreisha. Questions at this time for the bill author? Seeing none from the committee right now, I'm going to ask the following testifiers who have signed up to proceed to the testifying table. We'll start with Mr. Hudson, the Deputy Commissioner of Minnesota Management and Budget, followed by Mr. John Helmer from Olmsted County, who will be our next testifier. Mr. Hudson? Good morning, Deputy Commissioner Hudson. If you'll identify yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony, sir.
Good morning, Mr. Chair. My name is Edwin Hudson. I'm Deputy Commissioner of Enterprise Human Capital. Mr. Chair, if it's okay, there is a testifier who is under time constraints who would like to testify. So is it okay
Certainly.
That I
Yeah, I just point in the order that I had him here. We're very flexible if we can be. Yeah, absolutely.
Thank you.
You bet. Just stay close, Mr. Hudson, if you would. Good morning. If you'll identify yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman. Thank you. For the record, my name is Greta Gothier. I'm the legislative director at the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency. Mr. Chairman, I have a letter for distribution, please.
George, if you want to grab those and start distributing those. Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman and members, I'm here to testify on the thank you for the opportunity to testify on the DE-3 amendment of House File 3445. I'm here today testifying on behalf of a number of agencies. When you receive the letter, you'll see there are multiple signatures on the back. But my comments reflect concerns from the Department of Natural Resources, the Department of Transportation, the Office of Higher Education, the Department of Commerce, the Department of Administration, the Department of Public Safety, and the Pollution Control Agency, where I work. Mr. Chairman, the agencies are concerned because this impacts our core work in helping Minnesotans and Minnesota businesses understand the laws passed by the legislature and how those laws will be implemented. This bill seeks to establish a new process like rulemaking, but it would be applied to the formation and maintenance of a broadly defined group of policies. We appreciate some of the changes in language that are reflected in the DE-3 from the language as it was introduced, especially the removal of contracts from the definition of policy and the removal of letters from the definition of policy. However, the definition of policy is still quite broad, including written policy, guidelines, bulletins, manuals, or documents providing an interpretation, a clarification, or an explanation of a statute or a rule to provide guidance for agency regulatory functions, included but not limited to permits or enforcement actions. So one of our initial concerns is that this will require new administrative costs that are not funded in the bill, and it will slow down agency work because it is going to require that for every single one of the documents that fits this definition, we need to public notice it, and we need to have a 30-day comment period on it every 5 years, except for initially we have to do that for all of our existing policies by January of next year, 2019. So it's a mandate for 5-year public notice, comment, and review of all the documents that fit that definition, and it's not funded, so that we'll incur administrative costs. I'll let you read the letter and just maybe highlight a couple more points. But it will have an impact, especially the Department of Commerce was concerned that it would prevent agencies from providing compliance guidance to regulated industries. Agencies provide policy information to communicate with regulated entities, to send them notice about new state and federal laws and regulations that have come out that they need to be aware of. Then we also articulate procedures for complying. So how do they go about complying with statutory requirements? And that's a helpful thing because businesses want to know what it is they have to do in order to come in compliance with the law. So we issue guidance to help explain that to them. And also help explain how the agencies are going to proceed so they know what will be expected at each step of the way. Because that just streamlines the whole process for everybody, Mr. Chairman, and helps to keep the time and the cost down. We also feel that this bill is expanding the authority of the legislative committees and the legislative branch into the powers of the executive branch by requiring a delay of implementing policies during a legislative session. So many agencies were concerned about this, but probably the best example was of the unintended consequences around this is in relation to college students in Minnesota who need financial aid. This bill would hamper the Office of Higher Education's ability to issue updates to policies and procedures that they use to administer financial aid programs. So as a result, the bill could impact post-secondary students' financial ability to attend and complete college because of the delay during the legislative session before policies can be implemented and because of the timelines that the Office of Higher Education has in terms of when students have to get their financial aid papers processed and into their whatever college or university they're attending. I'll wrap it up, Mr. Chair, by saying that the removal of the governor's waiver authority in this bill really takes away the only available recourse for an agency that believes the administrative law judge has misconstrued or misconstructed the law. So that could be corrected by adding appeals authority, so allowing agencies to appeal an ALJ decision. But even an appeal process would take more time and more money than the current waiver. So for these reasons, we oppose this bill. Mr. Chairman, I will be happy to stand for questions.
Thank you, Ms. Gauthier. Members, questions for Ms. Gauthier at this time? Representative Nelson.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. So if I'm hearing you right, Ms. Gauthier, is that I'm thinking about the Campaign Finance Board, which would be probably underneath this also. And we just had a bill that we passed earlier. All their past rulings that they've had, they've gotten questions. So during the middle of a campaign, a campaign committee or a candidate has a question about how something should be interpreted. If this bill was passed, could that go into effect? Would it affect that election, or would that go to the next election? So something that may be a campaign finance violation, and they say this is a violation, they couldn't rule on that till after it goes before the legislature. Am I reading that right? Or
maybe we should ask Ms. Dyson.
Ms. Dyson, I guess.
Our former friend is not available. It's a busy night today. Representative Kreisha?
I can try to answer that, or I can look through it.
Yeah.
I think I know the answer, but I want to make sure I get it correct.
Good morning and welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed with the answering of the question. I assume that's why you made your way down.
I did. Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Lisa Frenette, and no, this does not affect a campaign finance board decision.
Thank you. Representative Nelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I see some problems with this, and while I want to make sure I have some sympathy towards rules and the rules, how they're instituted, but I think there's some of those things in this bill to be problematic, and I guess it concerns me.
Thank you. Other questions for Ms. Gauthier? Mr. Hudson, Deputy Commissioner, we'll take you at this time. Thank you for deferring for the schedule. Appreciate that.
Good morning, Chair Driscoll and members of the committee. Again, thank you for your flexibility. I really appreciate that. My name is Edwin Hudson. I'm Deputy Commissioner of Enterprise Human Capital at Minnesota Management and Budget. This morning I'm here to testify on how the language in the DE3 amendment would cause significant detriment to human resources and affirmative action officer services we provide our state employees. The amendment includes language to create a centralized workplace misconduct office at MMB. While we would gladly welcome additional resources to support our efforts to prevent sexual harassment in the workplace, this proposal would create even a greater barrier to prevention. MMB does not support this bill as it's written. For context, Governor Mark Dayton included a request in his supplemental budget to create an independent office to process sexual harassment and discrimination complaints and provide additional investigation resources and oversight across all executive branches. In addition to funding for expanded training for sexual harassment prevention, an employee survey, and an audit procedure, among other things. This request is important. It is an important part of our efforts to promote an inclusive and respectful work environment for all state employees by implementing the recommendations in our January 2018 report. The report was approximately 30-plus pages that we had sent to the governor. The bill's language would cut agency human resources and affirmative action officers and deny basic and critical support services to our workforce. This is done in this bill in two ways. First, the language expands the duty of the office beyond what is in our funding request by requiring the office to handle all complaints of misconduct. In addition to harassment, all complaints that an employee would have would come now under this responsibility. Under this language, the office would provide intake and investigation of nearly all forms of employee complaints. Secondly, the language requires any duplicate or conflicting work to be done within the agencies, all that would then be required to be transferred to this new office. In effect, the language significantly cuts agency human resource and affirmative action resources, and it transfers all of this to this one independent office. The core purpose of the governor's request here was the creating of a new independent office to provide our employees with additional neutral options to report harassment and to ensure highly skilled and independent staff are available to investigate their concerns. Pursuant to the statutory duties of MMB under 43A, we will carefully monitor the implementation of the new office and we will appropriate where we can. We'll make those costs where we can. MMB was not consulted in the drafting of this language and as is currently written, and we strongly oppose it. While it is our goal to fund a new independent office to handle harassment complaints and to provide these investigations appropriately, consistently across agencies, this language here, we find it to be problematic. Thank you for the opportunity to address this committee, and I'll stand for any questions you may have.
Deputy Commissioner, thank you for your testimony this morning. Members, questions of the Deputy Commissioner? Seeing none and hearing none, thank you. The next two testifiers, Mr. Helmer, if you'll come forward from Olmsted County Environmental Resources Director. And the next two testifiers I have are David McNary and Ann Cohen. If you would also make yourselves available here shortly, we'll get you in as well. Good morning and welcome to the committee. If you'll state your name, sir, for the record, and proceed with your testimony.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Thank you for the opportunity to testify on this. I'm here representing the Solid Waste Administrators Association of Minnesota. I'm the past president, and we have some concerns with particularly the Section 2, lines 212 through 216. While I think we all appreciate the frustration that a lot of people in the state are experiencing with how some of the rules are being interpreted, particularly for us, the Class 1 demolition landfill rules. We've been battling the agency for about 2 years now, trying to get some reasonableness in the application of those rules. But having said that, we think that this section of the bill is particularly overly broad and has quite a few unintended consequences. And I can relate an anecdote for Olmsted County, that a situation that would have really impacted us tremendously. As you may know, we have a waste energy facility that we recently expanded, and in that process, we segregated waste in our landfill so that we'd be able to remove the waste and burn them for energy and reclaim the landfill space over a number of years. But in that process, we needed a clarification on the rules to be able to store waste undercover rather than put it into the landfill permanently and then have to dig it up with all the dirt and everything. And we were able to, in a relatively short period of time, sit down with agency staff and go over the plan and get authorization to do that. And we see that this section would have prevented that completely. It would have stalled it at least for 6 months or a year before we would have been able to do that, and we would have lost a lot of capacity of the landfill at that time. So we think that preventing the agency to react to circumstances in a timely manner is one of the severe setbacks or drawbacks of this language. And we think it would have impacts on the county business of managing solid waste, but also private businesses would be in the same situation because they also have to comply with rules and regulations from the agency. And we do believe that the existing rulemaking process provides for guidance and thought processes through the statement of needs and reasonablenesses that are documented through that process. And perhaps what really needs to happen is that we need to make sure that the agency is applying all of the rules and not just picking and choosing sections of them. And in particular, the ones that I'm thinking of are the language that the legislature usually puts in or the rulemaking process usually puts in, that you have to consider the social economic factors and the full picture rather than just one little bits and pieces of the regulation. And if the agency had been doing that in a demolition landfill, I think we would have been long past the solution for that roadblock that we've experienced. And with that, I'm happy to answer any questions. I appreciate your time.
Thank you for your testimony this morning. Members, questions of Mr. Helmers? Seeing none, thank you for your time, sir.
Thank you.
The next, again, two testifiers, Mr. David McNary, followed by Ms. Cohen. And if there's anyone else that's interested in testifying before the committee this morning, if you will make your way down to the front, we'll get you worked in as well. Good morning, Mr. McNary.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is David McNary. I'm the Assistant Director of the Hennepin County Environment and Energy Department. I'm testifying today against the Delete All Amendment to HF 4335 on behalf of the Partnership on Waste and Energy, which is a joint powers agreement between Hennepin, Ramsey, and Washington counties. While no longer specifically referenced in this bill, the broad language of this bill still includes the Metropolitan Solid Waste Policy Plan prepared by the Pollution Control Agency every 6 years, and this concerns us. The Metropolitan Solid Waste Policy Plan guides the development of the public and private waste management system in the metropolitan area, and this plan serves to reduce risk to public health and the environment. We view this plan as a guidance document constructed within existing laws and rules, providing metropolitan counties and private businesses with guidance consistent with the current statutory landscape. The PCA conducts an open, inclusive, and transparent process in adopting the Solid Waste Policy Plan. County Solid Waste Plans and Metropolitan Solid Waste Plan Master Plans are prepared with significant community engagement and involvement from all sectors. We believe that Section 2 of this bill would require the Metropolitan Solid Waste Policy Plan to enter the MPCA rulemaking, thus creating unduly burdensome increased costs to counties, and will delay the implementation of master plans, which metro counties use to design the operation of solid waste programs intended to meet statutory requirements. County commissioners elected by and familiar with locals make decisions about how to handle trash locally while meeting the state's goals. Both the public and private sectors provide services, and throughout the state, many public services are provided by private contractors. The counties of the Partnership on Waste and Energy rely upon private entities in designing master plans modeled after the state policy plan. This bill could significantly delay the development of these plans and thereby create greater risk to public health and the environment. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. McNary. Questions for the testifier members? Representative Halverson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you for that testimony. So we've heard a few times now about cost to state and local governments. Do you anticipate that this kind of additional cost that this county would have to plan for, what kind of impact would that have on your local taxpayers?
Representative Halverson, I will let you, you know, go with that. This is not a finance committee. That would be something the state government finance would talk about with the finance part. This is more the policy related, but I want to just give you that latitude this morning. Mr. McNary.
Mr. Chair, Representative, I can't quantify what those costs would be, but any delay in our planning process would create additional costs to our taxpayers.
Representative Halverson, follow up. Other questions for the testifier this morning? Members, other questions? Mr. McNary, thank you for being with us here this morning. And Ms. Cohen? Representative Kreisha?
I just wanted to make note that, and House research can confirm this, this bill does do nothing for metropolitan waste. It doesn't address it at all.
Ms. Cohen, good morning and welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is Ann Cohen. I'm a senior staff attorney at the Minnesota Center for Environmental Advocacy. We are a small environmental group comprised of scientists and lawyers located here in St. Paul advocating for environmental causes. Prior to joining MCA, however, I was for 32 years an assistant attorney general. So let's just say I had a few encounters with rules and permits and guidance documents and things of that nature. This bill should not...
I noticed that you abandoned that for other duties.
Mr. Chairman, in point of fact, I retired.
Very good. Proceed.
So, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, thank you very much for the opportunity to speak today. What we agree on here today, I think, is obvious. I think we all agree that government should be transparent. I think we all agree that government should be speedy. And I think we all agree that policies and guidance documents and fact sheets are not laws and should not be enforced. And the courts agree with this, and state government already has in law procedures that persons who feel aggrieved that an agency is in fact enforcing a policy as though it was a law, there is already a recourse for those persons in state law. They can go to the Office of Administrative Hearings and appear before an administrative law judge and have a hearing on their claim that an agency is enforcing a policy document as though it was a law. And I myself have participated in those proceedings in front of the OAH, and so I know that people do take advantage of this procedure in state law. So this bill is not really about rules. It's about those policies that we all agree are not laws. I believe that this bill should not be passed for the following reasons. It makes it so burdensome for state agencies to provide fact sheets and guidance documents and manuals to the regulated community that it will discourage state agencies from making information available to the public about their activities. Instead of going through this process that you've heard today will be very expensive, and the agencies won't have budget to do it, they'll simply pull those policies, guidance documents, fact sheets, manuals off the shelf. Government will become less transparent, not more transparent, less transparent as a result of this bill. It will slow down the ability of the agency to provide services. You've already heard testimony here today to that effect. But people who need something from government, like a permit, if they don't have a manual or a fact sheet or a guidance document that takes the very complicated rules and statutes that this body passes and that the agencies enact and simplifies them and makes them obvious, then they will not know what the agency is thinking, good or bad, and it will slow the process down for getting that permit or approval or making that change that they want to make because they won't know what the rules are. This bill, because it requires the policies to go through a rule-making-like process, will result, I believe, in courts treating policies more like their rules, more like they're enforceable. After a rule has gone through the legislature twice, and after it's been published for public comment, and in fact people can ask for a hearing, so the bill has gone through a hearing, the policy has gone through a hearing, a court will be more likely to defer to that policy, which is in fact not a law and in fact not a rule. But because it's been through so much process, a court will actually treat it as though it was an enacted rule. And we don't want this because that will make government, frankly, policies are not laws. We agree with that. They should not be enforced, but the courts will defer to them as though they were laws after they've gone through this process. I've already mentioned there's no need for this legislation. There are already protections in the courts and protections in state law in Chapter 14 that allow people who feel aggrieved by the use of a policy to get that straightened out. I myself have defended the state in cases where it was charged that the agency was enforcing a quote-unquote unpromulgated rule. The courts know how to handle those cases. There are many such cases. And finally, as Ms. Gauthier mentioned, the bill has some constitutionally questionable provisions because essentially it claims that the state agencies are subject, quote-unquote, to the jurisdiction of the legislature. And it isn't even clear which committees of the legislature have jurisdiction over the agency. Apparently that's something that the House Majority Leader will have to decide under the language of this bill. So those provisions are quite constitutionally questionable. So in conclusion, I think this bill, although we all agree on the policies behind it, is not the path to go down. And that concludes my testimony, and I thank you for listening. And, Mr. Chairman, if there are any questions, I'd be happy to answer them.
Thank you. And I do have a member that has a question right now, Representative Swazinski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Cohen, just kind of a question. Do you feel like the NPCA ever adds provisions to permits based on guidance that maybe haven't ever been promulgated through a rule?
Ms. Cohen. Mr. Chairman, Mr. Representative Swazinski, that has, in fact, happened. And the agency has, in fact, been taken to court on that very topic, and it has lost. So the and it was against advice of counsel, I might add. So it does happen. I don't think it happens maliciously. I think it happens accidentally. And there are recourses in law. This bill is simply not necessary to fix that particular problem.
Representative Swazinski, follow-up?
I've heard this also from the cities potentially too, where there's maybe not necessarily been the technology or the ability to actually comply with that potential rule, and yet those things are being asked of those departments and those cities. So,
more of a comment, Representative Sisson.
Yeah, I'd say that's
than a
more
question.
Of a comment. Yeah.
See, Representative Nelson, it goes both ways. Ms. Cohen, if you'd like to comment on that.
I would. Thank you, Mr. Chairman and Representative Swazinski. Based on my experience, which is mostly with the state environmental agencies, before they adopt any manuals or guidance documents or fact sheets, they typically will go through a very elaborate process of meeting with the regulated community, in particular their consultants, to make sure that all viewpoints are heard and understood. Now, the policy that the agency might adopt, its interpretation of the rule, again, might not be one that everyone agrees with, but they do typically go through a very elaborate process. And they also typically will publish these documents on their website. Indeed, that's the entire point of having these guidance documents, is to get them out to the public. So no one is, at the agencies, in my experience, hiding the ball. They want to get their policies, procedures, and fact sheets out there. And so they do take public comments on them all the time. And the good part is they can change them. But when this bill passes, if it does, they won't be able to change them. This bill will take away the flexibility of the state agencies to change their policies, guidance documents, manuals, when somebody complains and said, this isn't right. Or the science has now changed. Or there's a new federal law that makes this impractical. This bill will take away the flexibility of the state agencies to change their manuals, their fact sheets, their guidance documents in the face of changing conditions. Again, government becomes less speedy and less transparent.
Thank you, Ms. Cohen. I don't have any other member questions at this time. Oh, Representative Swazinski.
Yeah, just thank you, Mr. Chair, Mrs. Cohen. I mean, this is just more of another comment, but maybe a question, but I think there'd probably be agreement with the committee that would, state, your argument is that, if these things aren't achievable, you'd be willing to change it. Maybe there could be some agreement that would say, hey, if, we would allow you to make rules as long as it actually saved communities money.
Representative Joachim.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I have to apologize if some of this was discussed. I was a little late getting here. Ms. Cohen, on page 4 on the fees and expenses, I don't know enough about administrative law judge policy area. Is it common to have an administrative law judge award fees and expenses? I know they do in other courts, but is that common in the administrative law judge area?
Ms. Cohen. If you would like to answer that, and then we'll also refer to Mr. Gehring on that as well. Ms. Cohen.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Joachim, did I get that right? Thank you. It's not common. It has been in the law. What this bill will do, however, is change it so that the administrative law judge must award fees and expenses. And I have participated in these hearings on the unpromulgated rule question, and I know there have been others that I haven't participated in. And obviously, there's a winner and there's a loser. What this bill does is take the discretion away from the administrative law judge to decide whether fees and expenses should be awarded. What that will do, I believe, is actually discourage citizens who want to challenge the agency's use of a policy from coming before the Office of Administrative Hearings, because if they lose, the ALJ has no choice. She or he must impose those costs. And that will actually discourage citizens from seeking the existing relief in state law that exists if they feel an agency is enforcing a policy.
Mr. Gehring.
Mr. Chair, Representative Joachim. To answer your specific question, I would say there are examples in other sections of statute, for example, in data practices where parties can be awarded expenses and costs depending on the outcome of the case in front of an ALJ. Also, this section you're looking at is replacing an existing subdivision that does provide a process for assessing costs of the office onto a petitioner potentially. So the way that the process works right now is that the agency by default is responsible for the costs of a proceeding in front of an ALJ, but there is a process that is being repealed. It's 14.381 subdivision 3 that allows for those costs to be assessed to the petitioner potentially. It appears as a new policy, but it's not entirely brand new here.
Representative Joachim, follow-up.
Thank you, Mr. Gehring. And it does seem to be drafted, though, that it takes some discretion away, making it a must instead of a may. Is that, am I reading that accurately?
Mr. Gehring.
Mr. Chair, Representative Joachim, I think that is a difference in this language, yes.
Representative Joachim, follow up.
Mr. Chair, can you point to me to the word must? I don't see it in there. I see shall. And I see discretion. I understand we're splitting hairs here, but I don't see must.
The way it's drafted in the first sentence.
You're right, Representative. On line 4.29, other expenses shall. Ms. Cohen, I don't have any other questions at this time. Oh, Representative Joachim.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and maybe Mr. Gehring can elaborate, because like I'm not a lawyer, but I'm reading 4.26 to 4.28. The underlying way it's drafted, it does say that the exceptions you're seeing are as an exception to what has to happen versus the exception to a possibly happening. But I have a cold, so I'll let Mr. Gehring answer.
Mr. Gehring, you want to take another swing at it?
Mr. Chair, I'm not sure I'm following what you're...
Representative Joachim, clarify your question, please.
Mr. Gehring, I don't blame you. I'm not sure I'm following what I'm saying either. So the way it's drafted under the fees and expenses, the administrative law judge shall award fees. So that's the underlying it shall. That's where you create your must. And then the exemptions that were noted by Representative Kresha in the following sections is just a way that you can exempt if it's unjust or if it gives a discretion for the judge to lower the fee, but that doesn't mean that the fee is not automatically imposed, right?
Mr. Gehring.
Mr. Chair, Representative Joachim, so I think the way it's structured is that it starts with the default presumption that the ALJ will award fees, but then they can be reduced, as Representative Kresha described, for the reasons contained in the subdivision.
Joachim, follow up?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So, Mr. Gehring, just so I hear you right, then the default presumption is that the fees have to be awarded. Thank you.
I think we are now done with questions with you, Ms. Cohen, but if you want to stick by in case there are some others. Representative Kresha, I'm going to see if there's any other public testimony. I'm going to give you a chance to respond, and then we'll go to any other member questions. Is there anyone else present that would like to testify on the matter before the committee, House File 3445, as amended? Anyone wishing to testify on House File 3445, as amended? Seeing none, Representative Kresha will give you the floor right now to respond or to share some additional information before we go to any other member questions.
Mr. Chair, I can take questions and then do final comments if you'd like.
Members, questions for Representative Kresha, House File 3445, as amended? Seeing none, Representative Kresha, if you want to go with your summation, and then we'll have the committee consider your bill.
Sure. Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. So, I understand the comments. I think this is a good process, and certainly there's some opposition to what I'm trying to accomplish. But let me back up and just take this from step one, which is we all acknowledge there's a problem. We all acknowledge that we need to look at these, and we all acknowledge that we're legislators that run into these situations where we're going to hear them in our communities. And so that's what I'm trying to address. I mean, I don't think there would be, and maybe there is, but I don't believe there's any disagreement that we can improve this. Now, if I ask an agency through a bill that I have here or other ones to have improvements, that's not necessarily cost. That's just asking them to do it differently. I have, in my own line of work, when I ask my people to do things differently, they don't say, well, that's going to cost more. I'm asking them to change things. Perhaps there are, but there's many terms here of substantial, of burden, that are not quantifiable. They're just perception-wise. So I don't think we're – I think we are overbroad in – our perceptions that this is going to cause huge, wide-sweeping changes. The other thing is, I find us all getting on both sides of this. On one side, well, we don't want to intervene in the process, but on the other hand, we need to review the process. And then even in here, I removed the governor's exemption. And one testifier said, well, that's the only exemption we have when the administrative law gets it wrong. Really? If the city has an exemption, they should get that exemption. And if an administrative law makes a ruling, why is the governor going to overrule that? So, I mean, what I'm trying to do is streamline this. I'm trying to make it better. And here are some unintended consequences that you did not hear. It could improve in transparency. It could improve better relations between us and agencies as we work through these. It could give more clarity to those that we are working with and improve the rulemaking process so that we actually know what is going out the door. In most cases, what we're simply asking is a review of a rule that was put into place through legislation. We're asking to review that one more time. I do not believe, and if I'm wrong, that the rulemaking is so speedy that it happens in that time when legislatures don't meet. I mean, has that happened yet, where a rule, we get out the door in May, and by God, we've got one right now, and oh my gosh, we got to, no, these are drawn out processes, as they should be, so we can get them right. And I believe, and what I'm advocating for here, is that we be good stewards of what our job is. Our job is to be representatives, and our job is to be able to go back in an informed way when I'm door knocking or working at a council and someone says, hey, why is this rule doing this, this, and this? And I'm going back and trying to change the rule when I could make that process better. So that's what we're trying to do. That's what I'm trying to do here. I don't think, much of what the agencies testified, they certainly have concerns. I agree with those. But that doesn't mean we shouldn't try to do our job better. And so with that, that's what my bill does, Mr. Chair.
Representative Kreisha, how long have you been working on rulemaking-related activities in front of your career at the legislature?
4 years, Mr. Chair.
And how successful have you been in being able to impact the rulemaking?
We're getting there, and I think I have good awareness. It's not been all the way through. There's been a couple of times we had agreement, almost had it through both bodies and to the governor's desk. But in that process, we have streamlined this language, and I believe we've gotten more and more agreement. Some of the language that you see here is language we've received from agencies on their recommendations. So it's not like I'm working in a black hole, working without them. We are trying to get agreements on all of them.
And Representative Kreisha, I don't see any member questions at this time, so I'm going to renew my motion that House File 3445, as amended, be referred to the Committee on State Government Finance. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed?
No.
The motion prevails. Representative Kreisha, you are on your way.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Member.
Division. We can do division. That's fine. I tell you it's going to be 8-6.
Eight.
All those in favor signify by saying aye. That's 8. All those opposed? That's 6. The motion prevails, 8-6. Representative Kreisha, you are on your way.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members.
Representative Moran. I will move House File 3246 to be before the committee, to be referred to the Committee on Health and Human Services Finance. Representative Moran, welcome to the committee. Good to see you.
Good to see you.
And if you will proceed with your bill this morning.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So trauma-informed policies and practice in relationship to this bill is to create a resilient, trauma-informed society where all individuals and families have the opportunity and the support necessary to thrive. We want people to be independent. The goal is to advance for public policies and program at the state, local, and tribal level that incorporate up-to-date scientific findings regarding the relationship between trauma across the lifespan and the many social and health problems. In addition, to work in collaborations with cities, tribes, to develop trauma-informed and prevention-focused policies and practices that reflect their experiences back out in the community. The aim is to create a task force to build on broad and effective coalitions across sectors and systems. We cannot continue to be a state that lives in silos. Recognizing that sustainable change requires the participation of people most affected by policies and services, as well as those responsible for the implementation and the commitment to include everyone's voice. So we know that people are fundamentally resilient, and I would like to see us prioritize actions and policies that support and build on natural strengths. The ability to create a more just, equitable, and trauma-informed society will require the development of a broad-based systemic solutions and structural reform in addition to new policies, in addition to new partnerships and funding mechanisms. So, Mr. Chair and committee, I think this is an excellent bill. My hope is that we can look at trauma-informed practices that helps us to be a more strategic body across the state.
Thank you, Representative Moran. We do have one testifier that has signed up, Mr. Ray Rennell. And I may have made a mistake on Ray. My apologies.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Rennell Ray. I'm the Director of Systems Change and Community Engagement at People Serving People, the state's largest and most comprehensive shelter for children and their families experiencing homelessness. Last year, we served over 2,000 people. Two-thirds of those folks are children, and the average age of children in our shelter is 6 years old. In addition to shelter and meals, we also provide services that help stabilize families. These services include advocates that really help our families navigate systems. We have employment services, and we also have a licensed early childhood development program on site. Every day we welcome pregnant moms, newborn babies, families that have been evicted or are fleeing violence. And we know that families come to us with multiple types of trauma in their background. This trauma includes trauma associated with homelessness, food insecurity, housing instability, and witnessing or experiencing violence or abuse. And for children, the trauma of seeing their parents trying to be scared or being scared and terrified and trying to figure out safety for their families. And what we know is that the brain science is clear, that multiple traumas impact a child's ability to learn, stay safe, and thrive, and to stay healthy. Our goal at People Serving People is really around creating stability for children and their families, not only in our building, but in the greater community. And this bill, as a systemic and statewide approach to addressing childhood trauma, moves the state in that direction. In 2016, People Serving People underwent an organizational change to embrace a trauma-informed approach in every aspect of our work. This means that we ask the question, what happened to you, instead of what's wrong with you. We use this lens in our approach to safety and security, organizational policies and procedures, classroom teaching and curriculum, and in our communication. And in the last few years, we have had some really great outcomes from our trauma-informed approach. We know that we are seeing greater outcomes for our children as they improve in their executive function skills and are ready for kindergarten and to be successful in a classroom. We have more effective communication with our guests and our staff, and stronger relationships with teachers and staff. We're better equipped to handle behavioral and emotional challenges. As children and their families in our shelter interact with other systems, including healthcare, public safety, and education, it's our hope that these other systems will also be asking the question, what happened to you, instead of what's wrong with you? And this task force is a great first step in that direction. Thank you.
Ms. Ray, my apologies.
No worries.
Your name. And thank you for being with us and sharing your experiences. Before we go to member questions, is there anyone else who'd like to testify on the matter before the committee? House File 3246. Anyone else wishing to testify on House File 3246? With that, we'll go to Representative Fenton, followed by Representative Tice.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Moran, thank you for bringing this forward. As a former educator and school administrator, there is great research out there on long-term positive outcomes in the health if you can prevent trauma in a child at an early age, and especially related to mental health as well. But this issue is not just a metro issue. This is something that happens in the metro and in greater Minnesota. And so, Representative Moran, I just want to see, are there any built-in with the members to have representation of greater Minnesota and the metro?
Representative Moran.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Fenton, as you stated, this is not a metro issue. This is an issue that is statewide that impacts all people regardless of status or ethnicity. And so the bill is drafted as that it will be a statewide engagement, because we need that statewide involvement, because recognizing that this is going to impact all children, and it does.
Representative Fenton, follow-up.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Moran. So thank you for that. And I do hope that when if this sees all the way to the governor's signature, that we do see good representation on this task force of the entire state of Minnesota. Thank you.
Very good. Representative Tice, followed by Representative Joaquin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Moran. I just was noticing as I was going through the bill that there was no mention of per diem or such, but do understand that going forward that will be included. So I just kind of wanted to bring up that point that it wasn't included in this bill as we see it, but it will be there as it goes forward. So thank you very much for bringing this forward. And I have similar concerns because St. Cloud sometimes acts like the mini metro area, and we have a lot of the same opportunities to take advantage of these task force. So thank you for bringing it forward.
Representative Moran, comments?
I agree. So a big portion of what you see is, you know, bringing in state departments as a collective, and those have expertise. So I think the stipend part will be minimum. We do have parents who have been impacted by ACEs, Adverse Childhood Experiences, who we are asking to be on this task force, and for them we do expect to at least be able to accommodate them. If they're traveling from, you know, from the rural community, we want to accommodate them because their voices are needed on this task force.
Representative Joaquin, followed by Representative Quinn.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I just wanted to thank Representative Moran for bringing this forward, and thank People Serving People for all the work that they do, especially around early childhood. The more and more we see on research on brain development, the more we realize that we have a systemic and epidemic problem around kids that are facing trauma. And I think this is a great idea. And I want to also thank Representative Moran for including a representative from each of our three ethnic councils and from the tribal social service providers. I think that gives it a really great statewide approach. So thank you so much.
And Representative.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thank you, Representative Moran, for bringing this great bill. And to the testifier, I have a few questions for the testifier, if I could ask.
Ms. Ray.
Yes. Thank you, Ms. Ray, for your testimony as well. And I have heard nothing but fantastic things about the services provided by People Serving People. I have a question about the length of stay. You referenced 2,000 over 2,000 people a majority of which are children, average age of six, which paints a picture, you know, in and of itself. I'm wondering how what the average stay is. That's my first question.
Ms. Ray, before you testify and answer Representative Pugh's question, once again, if you just identify yourself for the record, since there have been other speakers between you and the last time you were at the presenter's table.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Renal Ray from People Serving People. Representative, we have 99 shelter rooms and 10 permanent supportive housing apartments in our building. The average length of stay is 41 days. Some families are with us much longer, and as long as they qualify through the county system, they can be with us as long as they need to be. Some families just need us for a few nights or a week and are leave us pretty quickly. So it's really dependent, but the average length of stay is 41 days.
Representative Pugh, follow-up?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. And my follow-up question would be, so it sounds like you have a really solid relationship with the county and are able to work to facilitate transitions for those families that find themselves with you. But I'm wondering if there are any, to what degree is there a private sector element that you're able to work with to really, really help people rise above and beyond the support services provided by the government.
Ms. Ray.
Mr. Chair, Representative Pugh, we have over 46 community partners that work with our guests and folks in our community. Most of our community partners are other nonprofit organizations, but the private sector is a huge supporter of our work in supplying both volunteers and financial assistance through donations. Mm-hmm.
Representative
Pugh. Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you for that. And I just want to say having had a 17-year career with the Daytons, which birthed Target, and the Target having embraced their customers as guests, I just really love your referring to those who come to you as guests, and I think that really speaks a lot about you and your organization as well. And I do have one other question for the author.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you, Representative Moran. Well, maybe this question is also for, I'm sorry, I have one other for Ms. Ray. I'm wondering if people-to-people, to what degree does your organization serve beyond the metro? And if not, what other organizations are there throughout the state of Minnesota similar to yours, and do you work in collaboration with them if there are those similar organizations?
Ms. Ray.
Sure, Mr. Chair, Representative. Most of our guests come from Hennepin County, and that is how the family shelter system is set up in the state, to my understanding. There are similar organizations across the metro and across the state. And I'm sorry, I don't have a specific number to share with you at this point.
Representative Pugh?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just want to thank Representative Moran again. If I'm not a co-author, and I don't think I am, I'm going to become one.
Things are really going your way today, Representative Moran. Look at that. I have another member question. Representative Jeff's up.
Thank you, Chair. Representative Moran, thank you for bringing this forward. Question for the testifier. We continue to hear the economy has been doing better. Unemployment rate is, you know, considered in some cases record lows, and we haven't seen that. And yet we still continue to have a need, and I guess I've got two questions. One is, have you seen any decrease, a continuation, or increase in the need for your services? That would be the first question.
Mm-hmm. Mr. Chair, Representative Jessup, there is a seasonal dip right now that we are experiencing right now in our numbers, where we're down a little bit, which I don't think is a problem. I would rather have families not be in shelter than in shelter. We still know that our families are being impacted hard by the economy and struggle to find employment in a way that supports their families and stability, and we work with our families around that. There are, we know that our families also face systemic and structural barriers in finding employment and enjoying the upturn in the economy that others in our community realize.
Representative Jessup, follow-up?
Thank you, Chair. Yes, one follow-up. The follow-up is, and I know the task force will get this, but I'm just curious if you could give me an answer in advance. When you have these individuals, these families come to you, is there a couple of broad categories by which you tend to see these families come to you? There's some sort of duress and so forth, and that's where they're coming to see you. Is there any kind of like categories by which you could just give a broad informational education on? Thank you.
Ms. Ray.
Mr. Chair, Representative, you know, our families come to us with a multitude of different experiences. Some have been evicted. Some of our families are in the midst of or fleeing domestic violence. Some of our younger families, we have 18 and 19 and 20-year-old head of household families in our building. So some of our families come to us as pregnant women who then give birth and come back to the shelter who have been asked to leave their home or a stable housing situation. Anecdotally, we understand that some of our families have been doubled up with other relatives or family friends who then, once the school year is over, are asked to leave and end up in shelter while they're trying to figure out what to do next. Some of our families face challenges with addiction and are looking and seeking out some stability and will come to us with that. So I apologize, I don't have like the numbers and the breakdowns of how folks come to us. I just know that they come to us for a multitude of reasons, and all of that is in the vein of protecting and creating some safety and stability for their kids and figuring out what is their path to stability moving forward.
Seeing no other member questions at this time, Representative Moran, we will give you the final word this morning.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I just want to say that when we look at homelessness and youth homelessness, which is at really an all-time high, we have youth who are coming from across the state, you know, for whatever reason, locally, to find themselves homeless for all the reasons that Mrs. Ray stated. But we also know that there are many low wages as a factor for homelessness and, you know, the lack of affordable housing. It is a really big holistic approach, as we just heard Ms. Ray stated, why people are finding themselves in those conditions. But what the bill does, it requires the task force to do a few things. Engage the human services, education, public health, and the justice system to create a trauma-informed policies and practice to prevent and reduce ACEs, because we know the importance of the first 5 years in brain development and the outcome that's placed on, you know, people to be efficient and self-sufficient. It also supports family health and well-being. It identifies, the task force will identify social determinants of family health and well-being and then bring those recommendations to eliminate the racial and ethnic disparities in Minnesota to this body, so that we can look at how we are bringing solutions and guiding the $46 billion that we are spending in this state. And so, Mr. Chair, I just want to thank you for the opportunity to bring this bill before this committee, and I hope to have your support of you in the committee. Thank you.
Representative Moran, thank you for your work on this. We have heard a couple of different bills with task forces, and this committee is very open to doing the right thing, and you have brought something to us that is the right thing today. So I suspect you're going to have strong committee support, but we'll find out in just a moment. I renew my motion that House File 3246 be re-referred to the Committee on Health and Human Services Finance. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed, the motion prevails. You are on your way, Representative
Moran. Thank you.
And with that, no other. Oh, Representative Nelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just curious, when are we going to be meeting and hearing the pension bill? I know it passed the Senate, and just wondering where it's at, and I understand that everything's complete with it, so, but I've been getting questions myself about that.
The pensions bill will be taken up on or before the last day of session, Representative Nelson. I think I've covered my bases on that, so keep your schedules flexible because it could come at any time.
So, Mr. Chair, there's no issues with it that we have to be concerned about?
No,
it.
Not at all. No, nope, not at all. I will tell you, Representative Nelson, and the members of this committee, the same things that I've been telling people when they've come to us. Usually the pensions bill comes at the end of session, but given the last few years and the track record with the pensions bill, it was 90% complete by the time we started session, and the Senate wanted to move it because they wanted to get done with that and move on to other business at the time that we were taking up other business in the House, and we still don't have joint targets yet with the Senate, and so as a part of following legislative process and getting those things done, we want to make sure that we've got all of our I's dotted and our T's crossed so that when it is time, we move it and we don't have any issues at all, and we can continue with our pension stabilization and reforms bill that many people have worked a long time on. And I also want to publicly welcome you back to the Pensions Commission because of Representative Thiessen's resignation to go on to do some other things. I forget what they were, but he's off to do other things. And as a result, you will be rejoining us on the Pension Commission, and we're happy to have you back. Members, other questions or anything before the committee? If not, we are adjourned.